Hey guys, welcome to the Tokyo Lens podcast. And as always, if you are a regular listener, welcome back. Super psyched to be back after a bit of a hiatus. I actually just came back from 6 weeks in Canada. I got back in Tokyo about 2 or so weeks ago, and I'm genuinely just so happy to be back. That being said, the time in Canada was spectacular. Aside from a couple collaborations and a little bit of a trip out to New York to do some content and work with Tokyo Creative in the middle of all of that, the rest of it was just time with friends and family, time spent with loved ones, doing everything from creation to relaxation, watching TV, and all those things that I haven't done in so long. But the time away from Japan also really made me miss Japan, and that's one of the things that we're going to be talking about in today's episode. Today's episode, rather than being this super high value, I'm going to teach you something episode, is really just going to be a chance for us to get reacquainted, sit and talk, and just have a good time together. So if you haven't already, maybe grab yourself a cup of coffee. If you're on a jog, just settle in. We are about to have a good time together today. So it was the end of October when I headed out to Canada. It had been, I'd say, roughly 2 years almost since the last time that I had a chance to go back and visit my family. I've actually been very blessed. Many of my family members have been able to come out and visit me here in Japan. I appreciate all the time and effort they put to save up, because I think we all know at this point, a trip to Japan is not the cheapest thing in the world. Fairly quickly after getting to Canada, I started almost instantly missing Japan. I'd say the first week or 2 weeks, I was like, oh, this isn't bad at all. Maybe someday I could even move back here. You know, I like Canada. And then I'd say somewhere around week two, it started to get me. And I think it started with the food more than anything. I love Canadian food. And I guess when I say I love Canadian food, it's more that I love North American food. All those things that I can't easily find here in Japan, like, you know, grabbing myself some wings or going out for burgers and nachos, fried foods, ribs, all of this stuff that is available in Japan if you search for it, but not as, like, for example, something like cream cheese. Ah, just being able to go out and buy a thing of cream cheese or sour cream, jalapeno poppers. I'm sorry if I'm making you hungry. I know I'm making myself hungry. And I knew I was going to be talking about food, so I had some pizza right before this because, again, pizza easily available in Japan. And now we've done what we always do and just totally sidebarred. So getting back to the point, I started to really miss the healthier food of Japan. And one of the big reasons for this is within the first week, 2 weeks, I'd say definitely 2 to 3 weeks in Japan, I started to noticeably gain weight. I started to get a little bit of belly in there. The sides started to get a little bit softer. And I realized I was definitely eating way more calories than I should have been, a lot more oily foods than I should have been. And I just kind of wanted some vegetables and rice. And that's kind of where the whole thing started. You see, more often than not, when you live overseas for an extended period of time, after a couple months, I'd say it's fairly safe to say 3 to 6 months, you're going to get hit with a bit of homesickness. And I've talked about this in content before. It's everything from just missing home, missing the locations that you're so used to frequenting, missing the food, the family, and it's often triggered by some kind of an event. You weren't able to make it to your mother's birthday, or maybe somebody got sick and you couldn't go back. But you do get over that. Over time, you adjust and you accept and you understand that you're not always going to be able to make it back to North America when you want to, or whatever country you're from. And you will eventually have people visit you, and you'll find ways to get things like your favorite foods. Me, while I'm in Japan, there's actually one thing that I've learned that I can't live without. I do like snacks and candies, like Sour Patch Kids and Swedish berries, Swedish fish, all of these things. But that's actually not the thing that I can't live or survive without. The thing that I can't live without is cereal. And there are a few very, very specific ones. I didn't realize the love that I had for Golden Grahams and Lucky Charms until a couple of years back, I decided to pick up like a family-sized box of each of those and bring them back with me. And as soon as they ran out, I was like, oh no, we've got a serious problem here. And now every single time I go back to North America, I've got to grab myself a giant box or two of Golden Grahams and a giant box or two of Lucky Charms. Now, once in a while, people will bring those out to me, and I'm so thankful for it. In fact, a viewer/listener named Nosh, if you're listening, hello Nosh, once brought me some giant boxes of cereal, and I will be forever grateful for that because it was just such a kind thing to do. It takes up so much space in your luggage. It's just unbelievable to think that someone would be that kind. Anyway, it started with food, and then eventually I realized that I might be getting a little rusty on my Japanese. And so I started thinking, well, what can I do, right? What can I do to, you know, the food thing actually kind of sorted itself out. I'm going to slip back to that for a second because all of my Canadian friends in Canada were like, yo, there's this new Japanese restaurant that I really want to take you to. So eventually I just ended up going to all these Japanese restaurants. But again, in Canada, it's not exactly like it is in Japan. And I will tend towards ordering the more non-Japanese things. I'll get the fried foods. I'll get the tempura shrimp and I'll get the little ribs and all of this other stuff. But that one kind of sorted itself out all on its own. But the lack of Japanese usage kind of started to get to me. So every now and then I would, you know, get in touch with somebody back in Japan. I would call up some of the shamisen players like Kiki and kind of work out some of our plans for the new year because we've got some exciting stuff that we'll talk about a little later on. But eventually I was just like, you know what? No, I just need to keep my Japanese fresh. It's been 3-4 weeks since I've used it at all. And so there's a couple of things that I did while I was overseas. I went to the Japanese Cultural Center in Toronto. Part of this was for a meeting for a hopefully shamisen-related event that I'm hoping to do either in 2020 or 2021. And another thing that I did was I just jumped into Japanese TV shows. Luckily, sites like Crunchyroll and whatnot are available, and I still have all my original DVDs for Crayon Shin-chan, which, if you don't know, is an absolutely ridiculous and childish Japanese show that I just love so much. And this gave me a chance to kind of refresh a little bit of my talking and a bit of my listening. I would get into a bit of podcast, but more than anything, as all of this was happening, I started to realize that it wasn't so much just the language that I missed, but it was the involvement in the Japanese culture and the life that I had built here. A lot of that was triggered by going to the Japanese Cultural Center and talking about the shamisen side of things, and then that making me remember that I'm in the middle of a giant project right now with two shamisen players that I work with named Kiki, and I got on the phone with them and I was like, hey, we gotta work out our plans for how we're gonna continue this when we got back. And much like these podcasts, what started as a very planned discussion got off way off topic, and we found ourselves talking for probably an hour and a half, 2 hours at length, just about random shamisen related topics. And believe it or not, yeah, there is that much to talk about. And it kind of gave birth to what I think we're going to see a lot more of over on the YouTube channel come 2020. I cannot wait to bring a lot more shamisen content. The filming for it has already started. There's so much to come. So if you are interested in the shamisen and musical side of this, definitely hit me up with a DM. Let me know what you're the most interested in. I love it all. So there's no filter on me. I will share everything. But if there's something specific you'd like to see, someone told me the other day that they would actually love to see a vlog with me and Kiki, just like a day of us together. Other people were like, oh yeah, we'd love to hear you play shamisen because you haven't done a lot of that. So the options are limitless. Don't be afraid to DM me through Twitter, Instagram, any of that, or even tweet me publicly and let me know if there's something in that range that you would like to see. Now, That being said, the other thing that really made me miss Japan, I think this is an obvious one, was just the weather in Canada. It got very cold very quickly. Somewhere shortly after Halloween, got hit with really, really bad snow. The road conditions were just atrocious. And I'll tell you one thing, to any of you who live in a snowy climate and have to deal with the perils of shoveling your driveway and clearing off your car, I have so much respect for you. You don't even know. My respect for you right now is through the roof. Even if it's just one or the other, just having to walk through the snow. If you're not from a snowy culture and you've never had to scrape off the car windshield and clear all the snow off the car and let it warm up before you can actually drive away, and then only to get in there and have the steering wheel be so cold that you can't even touch it without gloves. If you're not from one of those cultures, it is an experience in its own. And me being out of Canada for as long as I have, I'd completely forgotten. I think the last time I went back was 2 years ago. I didn't get hit with that much snow. It really wasn't that bad. But this time, there was a cold snap right in the middle, and that made me miss Japan. And then before I knew it, 6 weeks of travel and relaxation was done. I did a couple videos with my brothers. We didn't really want to spend too much of our time together on content production. It had been so long since we had had quality time that we decided, you know what, let's just unbox some snacks. That would be a lot of fun. And so if you haven't seen them, there are one or two videos over on the channel with some snack unboxings. The most recent snack video with me and my two brothers, Alexander and Jesse, has a little bit of a hidden hint at the end. That's all I'm going to say before I move on. So if you haven't seen it, I recommend go and check it out, especially if you're a fan of the podcast content and you would like more podcasts. More does exist. But coming back to Japan was something that I was both excited and nervous about. It gave me a great deal of appreciation, I guess would be the best way to say it, for all of the content and Instagram stories and everything that my friends do. I had not... You lose perspective when you're in Japan for a long time. When you're really close to the subject, you eventually lose the perspective of just... I used an example yesterday with some friends. We were at Tokyo Tower, and I was like, sometimes I feel like I'm always standing at the base of Tokyo Tower, and you can see it, you know it's there, you know how beautiful it is, but sometimes to really appreciate it, you've got to step back and get a different view of it from different angles, or, you know, from far away, from a rooftop, from wherever. And I think that's what being in Canada really did. Being in Tokyo, I kind of lost, I was like, well, you know, what is beautiful about this place? What should I share? Should I share anything? It's all become so normal to me. And it's one of the reasons I've said it a billion times that I love hosting visitors. It's because I get to see Japan and Tokyo through fresh eyes. And being in Canada for 6 weeks kind of gave me fresh eyes. After 4 to 5 weeks, I found myself really looking forward to Instagram stories and tweets from my friends in Japan, just so I could see what things were like there, see how the weather was, or just see these locations that I missed so much. And I genuinely, genuinely enjoyed that. And coming back, it just kind of made it so I wanted to share absolutely everything. So I've been spending a lot more time kind of putting together Instagram stories and sharing little photos and whatnot through tweets. And it's because now I know what it's like to, when I was in Canada, where I was especially, was not deep in the heart of a city like Toronto. I did spend some time in Toronto, but I was hours north of there in a very, very countryside spot. So most of the time that I was spending that wasn't inside of the house was just driving through fields and forests and back roads and dirt roads for hours at a time. On average, anywhere from 2 to 3 hours of driving on these type of streets per day. And there's a there's a stark contrast between that and the beautiful streets of Tokyo, especially the streets of Tokyo at night, the way I like to share them. So coming back, I was like really obviously looking forward to the weather. I had unpacked a nice warm down jacket that I was using in Canada, and I have not. I've still been wearing it in Tokyo. I just really haven't needed it. If you don't know, I think it's pretty common anywhere around the world, but if you don't take public transportation, one of the biggest struggles, and we'll come back to public transportation in a minute, but is the public transportation tends to be insanely heated in the winter, and you don't need that. It's like, you know, 0 degrees outside, which isn't that bad, but then you get in a train that's like 28 degrees. Again, all of these are Celsius, and you've got a down jacket on and you are cooking. Your skin is boiling. So yeah, haven't really needed the jacket. I've had some beautiful days here in Tokyo. If you're wondering what Tokyo's been like recently, the weather has been spectacular. There's been a lot of sunny days, a couple days of rain after coming back, but for the most part, it has been light jacket weather, for me at least. You could get away with like a fall or spring jacket. It's been sunny, it's been beautiful outside, and I've just really been enjoying being back. Don't miss the trains. As I said, we're going to loop around back to the public transportation side of things. That's something, especially when you spend 6 weeks just driving and having, you know, all the space in the world to yourself, to go from that to the crowded trains of Tokyo, you're just like, oh my lord, I did not realize how much I don't miss this. People pushing and shoving and crammed into these little spaces. Oh, I don't miss it. I don't. And the temperature on the trains and woo. So one of the things that I did, I think last weekend, I don't talk about it often and I don't put it in a lot of content, but I actually have a motorbike here in Japan. And I decided that it was about time to get this motorbike completely fixed up. That way I can just avoid using trains that little bit more. Where I live is somewhere around Tokyo Tower, and it's central enough that I can pretty much get anywhere via motorbike. That's okay. We're just going to call it a motorbike for the rest of the podcast. I can get anywhere via motorbike in like 20, 30, 40 minutes. So it's really not bad. Obviously closer areas are closer. And that was such an unnecessary comment. Closer areas are closer. Welcome to the Tokyo Lens podcast, people, where I make high value comments like closer things are closer. It's been nice to have my motorbike though, and just to be able to putt around the city, especially since the weather has been so beautiful. I've kind of needed gloves in the last 2 days because it's been a touch colder. But the other thing that I've really, really been enjoying since coming back is having my shamisen. I have missed just sitting down and practicing playing music more than I could possibly imagine. And it's unfortunate that I took as much time off as I did, because I still have all the muscle memory. But for anybody who's done anything that takes any form of stamina, you'll know that muscle memory and stamina are two very, very different things. The other day, I had one of the Yoshida brothers come over to my house for a formalized training called Okeiko, where we sit down for about 2 hours and practice techniques and songs together. And he was laughing at me the entire time. He's like, you can still play, you just can't play long. I would get halfway into a song and I'd just be pouring sweat, my face would be red, my hands were in so much pain, but I'm still just so, you can probably hear it in my voice, I am smiling so much right now just to be back and have my shamisen and be able to play. I've spent on average about 2 hours per day practicing shamisen since I got back. I've been putting together some content related to shamisen, as we talked about earlier. It's just becoming a much, much bigger piece of my life. And actually, there's going to be a little bit of a shamisen related announcement coming up soon. So if you are not following me over on Instagram or Twitter and you are interested in that side of things, definitely jump over. Let's hang out over there. Again, don't hesitate to shoot me off messages and DMs. I reply to whatever I can. I obviously don't get to it all the time. But I've also just kind of been enjoying exploring and going around Tokyo and just being back here. Like just walking the back streets, making videos with friends, going up onto rooftops, enjoying the food. Yesterday, I went out to the Mori building in Roppongi, in the Roppongi Hills area. There's a giant building there. That building is the home to places like the Google office or the Apple office and the YouTube space and all of these. And there's a museum up on one of the top floors. It's, I think, 1,800 yen to get in. So it's about $18, $20. And you can go in, enjoy the museum. It always changes. There was a Marvel museum in there previously. I think I'd gone to a photo exhibition before that. And then you can pay an extra 500 yen, about $5, to go up onto the roof. I had never done that before. I was aware of the space. I knew that it was a seemingly very great space, but I had never actually gone up. And so yesterday, two friends who are content creators from Canada were visiting me here in Japan, and we decided, why don't we go up and try to get Blue Hour and get some photo and video content of Tokyo Tower. And it was very, very much worth the time. It is a gorgeous view, and you can see, obviously, 360 degrees of Tokyo. It's even better when Tokyo Tower lights up in the evening. If you catch it during Blue Hour, obviously the best. If you go during the daytime, though, and you get a clear day, you can see all the way out to Mount Fuji. It's just so, I'm literally, as I say this section of the podcast, looking through photos that I took there yesterday, and it is a spectacular place to be. You can now see the Olympic Stadium coming together and the shape of it and everything. It's just wonderful. And then at night, we decided to go out and get some, katsu? Katsu, like fried pork cutlets and rice. Ironically, I just put together a video with Sharla called, I'm going to call it something like Dear Vegans in Japan or something like that. Because after spending all that time with my family in Canada and speaking to so many different people, I learned a lot about, you know, like these health restrictions that lead to things. There's a whole slew of reasons, obviously, why someone would go vegan and choose to have that dietary lifestyle. But more often than not, a lot of people choose it because of health reasons or digestive restrictions or, you know, any of that. I'm clearly not eloquent enough to iterate this clearly, but hopefully you get the point. Like, for example, my little brother has so many dietary restrictions that he basically has to eat vegan. And after so many talks of this, I was like, you know, there's actually a great deal of resources available in Japan for people needing a vegan diet. But a lot of the time, if you look at the social media and the image out there, you would almost assume that, like, well, asking is just not permitted. And I think that's absolutely ludicrous. So if this podcast has any high value segment, it's going to be this segment right here where I say that it is 100% accurate that some restaurants in Tokyo will not permit changes to their menu. They will just be like, nope, don't even ask us. We do not make changes. You can't take stuff out. You can't put stuff in. Just no. Plain and simple, no. But there are many places, I wouldn't say an equal number of places, but still enough places that are fully geared towards people who have dietary restrictions or live closer to a vegan lifestyle. In the day that Sharla and I did all of that, we had gone to a new vegan convenience store. I then took her to a cake shop that makes cake out of rice flour. afterwards, we went to a place called Sekai Cafe, which does vegan and halal food. We didn't eat anything there because we were still completely stuffed. But then we then went to a dagashi shop where we could find some snacks and sweets that classify as vegan or vegetarian. And Japan even has restaurants like shabu shabu restaurants, which we, you know, you can go in and do your meat cooked and everything, that have entirely vegetarian options. I think there's one in Akihabara which will give you like a miso broth, and you can do just plain vegetable plate, like veggies only, and it's all you can eat vegetables, and it's actually not that bad. I love eating meat. So when I go, if I'm with a vegetarian or vegan friend, they'll just order the normal one, give me their meat, and we're both happy. But the vegetable options and the vegan options here in Japan are there. And there are so many people, and this is the really important part that I think you need to understand. There are so many people that want to help you find things that you can eat. Like, if you have any form of dietary restriction, if you need to be gluten-free or you can't have MSG, honestly, talk to the people at your hotel, your hostel, your homestay, wherever you are, and just keep talking to people until you find someone who's like, oh, I know people in this situation, I know what you can eat, let me help you out. More often than not, people will be like, oh, I'd love to help you find some stuff that you can eat. And they'll go through the work to find stuff. It's really, really welcoming and wonderful. I've seen a lot of stuff online over the past like 6 months to a year of all these like, oh, please don't change Japan in this way, this, that, the next thing. And, you know, I'm sure that some of them feel that they've got really strong ground to stand on. But in the end, I say it all the time. I'm almost borderline tired of saying it. No matter where you go in the world, people are people. There's going to be people who want to be able to help you, just like there will be back in your home country. There's going to be people who have the same views as you, the same dietary restrictions if you have them. So do not be afraid to ask. Just because the person you're talking to may have different views or a different dietary lifestyle than you do doesn't mean that you should be afraid to ask them. Most people are very, very welcoming, and I've never yet had trouble, because anytime that my little brothers have come, there is some kind of dietary restriction. And the same thing with family, like my mother and father each have dietary restrictions that when we go out, I ask the restaurant, how about this? How about this? How about this? Or I just ask friends around me, hey, I'm looking for things kind of in this category, where would you recommend going? And with the internet being what it is nowadays, there is no shortage of online resources either. Another thing that I am so tired of saying, but they do exist, and it is getting better. I think a lot of people kind of got used to, you know, they came to Japan for the first time a couple years ago, and things at that time were not as readily available online, and maybe they had one or two experiences that would lead them to believe that it might be a little more difficult or a little more limiting. But over time, things have started to change. It's become much, much more open. So that is it for my rant on all of that. I just want everybody who comes here to be able to feel comfort when it comes to food. Food can be a really big thing. For a lot of people, it can be the make or break decision on whether or not they come to Japan. I have friends who are like, I don't think I'm ever going to go to Japan just because I don't know if there'd be anything that I could eat. Yes, that is an actual thing that I have had people say to me, and it just shows how important it is to have comfort when it comes to food and to have the knowledge and understanding when it comes to food. Whether you are vegan or whether all you want to eat is Outback Steakhouse, TGI Fridays, Carl's Jr., and McDonald's, all of those things exist right here in Japan and in Tokyo. Okay, now that I'm really done talking about that now. The other thing that I kind of wanted to rehash and mention, because it's been a little while since I've had the opportunity to mention it, is if you plan on coming to Japan in the spring of next year and you are into the photography side of things, I am actually running photo tours with Moment. I don't know if you've ever heard of Moment, but if you haven't, they are kind of like a lens and case company. They do beautiful lenses for smartphones and like cases to hold the lenses. They have everything from wide angle and zoom to anamorphic lenses and so much more. And they have actually invited me to work with them in running photo adventures, if you will, right here in Japan. It's going to be a full week of just going around the city, hitting back streets, hitting areas like Golden Guy and going up onto rooftops and going out to the Mount Fuji area. I think it's like a 7-day full, just hanging out together for 7 days doing photography. Even if, you know, you don't know anything, I teach all the basics and we just go out and have a great time together. If it's something that you're interested in and you were already kind of planning on coming to Japan around that time, I'm going to link those in the spots for these are limited. So if, you know, you're kind of on the fence, it might be better to decide sooner than later. We're thinking of even moving the second tour if it doesn't book up soon and just keeping the first one. I think the first one only has 2 or 3 spots left. But yeah, you've probably noticed by now, but I am genuinely, genuinely just so happy to be back. It reminds me of every single time that I came back from overseas with Japanese shamisen players and whatnot. I would always ask them, like, what does it feel for you? What does it feel like for you to come back into the country after being overseas for, you know, either a short or long period of time? And almost every single time, I would get the answer, relief. You see, when you come back, especially for them, they would say that when they came back, they kind of felt like they knew what to expect. Whereas back home for me, like Canada or overseas, there's really no expectations. You live your life, everyone around them just kind of lives their life. But here in Japan, you can kind of expect, for example, how people are going to move. They're most likely going to stand to the left of the escalator. They're most likely going to stand to the sides of the train and then go in when the doors open. Same with elevators and all of that. You have these expectations. And while those do breed comfort, for some people, they can also breed kind of pressure because there are these same expectations of you. But even in a city as chaotic and crazy looking as Tokyo, it creates a certain organization and comfort that is really, really nice to come back to. I believe it's one of the reasons why so many people end up having more than one trip to Japan, why people come back 2 times, 3 times, or inevitably for many people come back every single year. And it's why I'm very certain that I'll always come back, no matter whether I live here in Tokyo or whether I someday move overseas. I will always find myself coming back. And know that that was not some kind of hint that, like, oh, I'm thinking of leaving Japan or anything like that. I am here for the long haul. You got nothing to worry about. If anything, with these 6 weeks out of the country and all the anticipation and excitement that it has built inside of me, we're really just getting started. So thank you guys so much for joining, and I will talk to you again real soon.